The following podcast is sponsored by SuperheroStuff.com.
I love the 80s.
I kind of do, too. It's our teenage years.
And it seems like a lot of people like the 80s.
Well,
we've had the 80s and 90s.
We've talked about this before, and that's because the people who are running things now are our age.
Our age.
And they were teenagers in the 80s, or in the teenagers in the 90s, and there's a nostalgia for that time period. I mean, we have the... remember the big lie they told you when you were in high school? These are the best years of your life. I mean, I had some good high school years. No, I'm not going to argue with you, but they weren't the best years of my life.
No, well, I'm still waiting for mine.
Well, see, there you go. See, they weren't the best years of yours either.
No. By the way, my name is Jason Hunt, and sitting across from me is Timothy Harvey.
Hello.
And this is our...
That was a cold open.
50th. Well, we do that sometimes. We do that sometimes. This is our 50th episode. 50th episode of H2O here on Sci-Fi Family Radio.
Have we really done 50 in a row?
We've done 50. Well,
we took off, we had some holidays.
We had a couple of weeks where we did holidays, and the beginning of this show was not weekly.
True.
We were not weekly until we picked up Superhero Stuff as a sponsor.
We were bi-weekly. Yeah. Every couple weeks.
And then our very first episode was not a podcast. It was a video.
That's true.
When we talked about how Santa Claus was a Time Lord.
Right, right.
Yeah, so that was the very first one.
50 of them, though.
50, yes. This is our 50th episode.
What was the date of our first one?
It would have been Christmas-ish, December of a year.
2013? Wow.
Yeah. We have some long-lived shows.
Yeah, we do.
Because Week in Review has been around since 2013.
Mm-hmm.
This show has been around since late 2013. Echo Chamber bounces in and out a little bit. And then we've got, if we can get it all put together back again, we've got Comic Concarney sitting out there. We could do, for comic book news and stuff. But yeah, you look and realize that coming up in March is our 6th anniversary. We've been around longer than IO9. If that puts into perspective, our website has been around longer than IO9.
So how do we get some of that Gawker money?
I don't know. I don't want to sell to Gawker. But yeah, it would be interesting to see if it'd be interesting to see what our site and our shows and all of this stuff would look like if we had that kind of that kind of backing, those kind of resources. Because everything that we do, we've been around 6 years. All of these articles that we post and all of the interviews that we do and all the conventions and the events that we go to, the red carpet premieres. I mean, we're now getting our own little card printed on the red carpet. Here's where you stand.
Yeah,
out in L.A. And I'd really like to build up Team New York again, because we've had people in New York, we've had people in Los Angeles, and we've been at premiere screenings and press conferences and all these different things, all volunteer. It's just our people go and show up, and they have a camera, or they have a microphone, or they've got something to write down and record what happened.
Yeah.
Basically for free. I mean, they're just doing it because we love to do it.
Yeah.
And at some point it would be nice to make some money doing this, but it's not the main goal, I guess, at this point. Simply because you have to figure out the content has to be there to get the audience, has to be there to get the advertisers, but you have to have the advertisers in order to spend money to tell people about how you exist and get the audience. It's kind of a chicken and egg thing.
Yeah, and unfortunately, it's like so many things involving the internet. It's like trying to make a web series profitable.
Yeah,
and it's kind of like,
Which you don't.
How does this work? I don't know. Well, you made money. How did you do it? I don't know.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you look at, because a lot of people look at the Guild as a model of what to do. How do you make money? I don't know. How did Felicia Day do it? Well,
She's Felicia Day.
But see, the thing about it is, though, who was Felicia Day before she did the Guild?
Oh, she's been all over the place. I mean,
yeah, but really, she was a guest. She was a guest on a number of shows, but she wouldn't. I mean, she did a few guest shots on Buffy. That's where she got her following, I guess you could say. And not to detract from that, but Felicia Day was not a name before she did the Guild. And suddenly the Guild just exploded onto the internet, and she's got Microsoft, and she's got all these other things.
Well, I think I always had a sense
and
of
And I'm hers. Not complaining. I want to be clear. I'm not complaining about it.
I feel like, you know, for some reason I had more of a sense of her before the Guild than that. But I think it was a nice thing because she actually came in from having an audience through Buffy. And I think Buffy was that kind of show. Where you're on it, you had such a strong fan base that if you were a character that they liked on the show,
then you were able to translate,
and they should. I mean, by all means, you know.
Well, and the other thing too is
carry the books onto your
Buffy was one of those first places where you had an online community with the Bronzers, and I think that probably translated into you've got an online community. Well, these people are online. Make a show that's online,
right?
And that contributed to that as well. So you can't. It's like trying to capture lightning in a bottle twice,
right?
And duplicating any kind of a model seems problematic at this point. How do you do it? There is no one set way to find that golden egg, that way to actually generate revenue. I mean, we've got a number of different things that we're looking at. I mean, there's Patreon, and there's the PayPal button on our site, that people can just donate. But then how do you get people to know about your site? That's the big thing. We need ambassadors. We need people to go out and say, this is a really good show. You should listen to it. This is a really good site. You should go visit it. And build our resources that way. But I think we probably would want to look at maybe. I got it. Tell me if this works for you. We take all of our shows, right? And we do photo shoots for all our hosts in flared pants and pastels.
Oh God.
and I guess mullets maybe.
Oh God, no.
And then we rebrand everything, all of our marketing and everything, to reflect the 80s. Because that seems to be a thing. That seems to be a popular thing that people keep going back to. See how I brought all that back into the topic there?
I see that.
that's what you do. I made a list. I want you to listen to this list, and I may not have a complete list here. Now, outside of, because we've got Thunderbirds are coming back and The Man from U.N.C.L.E. is coming back, and that's one of the things that prompted this conversation that led to a topic here. Those were 60s. But then you've got Highlander is getting a reboot. Prometheus is getting a sequel.
Mm-hmm.
Ghostbusters.
Right.
X-Files is coming back to Fox.
Yep.
The Terminator's got a new movie out. Battlestar Galactica is getting another reboot.
Right.
The Equalizer just had its movie version, which didn't do very well. 21 Jump Street.
Mm-hmm.
Jurassic World is the new one. Twin Peaks is coming to Showtime. We had the A-Team. We had the Dukes of Hazzard. We had Starsky and Hutch. Knight Rider, such as it was, Bionic Woman, the $6 Million Man is coming to the movies.
Sure,
we've got The Flash on CW. It's technically not a reboot, but it may end up being a sequel.
Right.
I still think that, I don't know where they're going with it at the end. I still think maybe you could have the parallel universe where John Wesley Shipp is still the Flash. I think that's where they're going.
I think that would be really fun.
But all of those shows, 1976, 77, up through 86, 88. When did the X-Files debut? 88, 90? When was the X-Files?
Was that
early 90s?
Something like that, yeah.
That time period, for whatever reason, and that's what we're going to get into on this show, that time period seems to be the candor of television entertainment.
Well, okay, look at it. Look at what happened there. You had Fox was exploding as a network. I mean, you know, they were actually having a cable was happening in the middle 80s, early 80s, middle 80s. You know, some of that stuff. You look at your Dukes of Hazzards and your Knight Riders and your A teams. I mean, that's very much 1980s stuff. That's early 80s.
Yeah.
That was network.
Knight Rider started in 1986.
And you had a certain, and of course that was really the kind of episodic television that you just can't do anymore. Intelligence basically tried to do that last year.
Yeah.
And was it last year? And you just really can't do that anymore. Audiences don't want that. I mean, you can do that for a sitcom. You can do that for, but if you're doing a genre show or a drama or something like that, it's really, you just can't do that. And now we hit the reset button and everything, you know, we start up with a whole new adventure. You can't do that anymore. You have to, I mean, people want plots. They want through lines. They want, arcs.
Story arcs.
And remember, that was also the time period when people were trying to put arcs on television.
Murder One. One of the first ones.
Farscape. And both of them had real trouble. Because
Stargate.
Yeah, you know, Stargate.
Stargate started trying to do it.
The networks just fought that tooth and nail. Mm-hmm. And so they ended up with, X-Files was in many ways kind of a compromise show. It was, you know, every episode was a monster of the week, but there was this larger storyline they were trying to tell. And so when you get into the later part of the show, when you could have arcs, and then 24 comes along in the 90s. Was it the 90s? Some of this stuff, it starts to blur in a way.
Yeah, it does.
Well, because so much of this stuff was happening around the same time. But 24 hits...
Has 24 been on that long, really?
24... basically, you end up with this thing where it's like, you know, it explodes because all of a sudden you have this, you know, this every hour of television is an hour of the story.
24 started in 2001.
Okay, so yeah. But at the same time, you're looking at something where... You know, up until that point, you know, finding something with an arc that wasn't a soap opera was really, really hard.
I think Murder One was one of the first ones.
I think it was.
It was 1995.
Yeah, I think it was. But I also remember how many seasons of Murder One did we get?
Two.
There you go.
But see, the thing about it is, though, the first season and the second season were much different. Your first season...
Yeah.
Was one case,
mm-hmm.
and the entire season was this one case, and the twists and the turns and the drama and the everything and the other and that, and it was good.
Oh yeah,
it was brilliant. I watched that every week, and I thought this is yeah. I could feel that this show was different,
mm-hmm.
and mainly because of the arc, but also because of the star. I mean, you had. Daniel Benzali,
mm-hmm.
and he was just so cool, you know. I mean, nothing got to him.
Yeah,
and he was always in control, and it was just one of those things. Where, like, I could watch this guy for a long time.
Yeah,
you know, it was one of those. But of course, he didn't come back the second season.
Right,
they got rid of him. And
well, he wasn't your
he wasn't warm.
Well, he wasn't warm, and he also wasn't your leading man, because I think we were still fighting that leading man, leading woman, you know, the really attractive lead. He had a very distinctive look, but he did not mm-hmm. fit into the mold, right?
Well, and yeah, because you could tell because they brought in Anthony LaPaglia
mm-hmm.
in the next year, and he, you know, he's this handsome, you know, guy and more of a leading man
yeah.
type of character. And the second season, of course, got split, so you had more than one case.
Right.
And it didn't work as well.
No, I don't think it did. And I think that you look at some of this stuff. I think the 80s was a time for really interesting experimental television that really didn't know what to do with it. And you didn't have, and I think they really didn't, maybe they didn't really understand what was happening because you had cable, and so your numbers weren't the same, and suddenly some of these shows were not getting the numbers that shows that had been around for a while and were established.
Right.
And you could sit there and go, oh, well, the numbers aren't as good as they should be, despite the fact you've got HBO and Cinemax and Showtime, well, you know, over here, you know, sucking your chunk of your audience.
Well, and then too, you also had all of the syndicated stuff, Xena, Hercules.
Oh, sure. UPN,
yeah. Star Trek Voyager.
Yeah.
When are that? Man, that's 20 years ago.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, of course, I mean that's the '90s.
Yeah.
But still, that's that time period mm-hmm. that we keep going back to. Yeah. I'm waiting for the Mutant X movie.
Well, sort of like 85 to 95.
Sliders. Where's the Sliders movie? You know? Because they never went home.
Well, the problem is that Sliders, and I don't know, I don't think a studio could justify a Sliders movie.
They'll show up in The Librarians.
There you go. You know what? They actually could.
They could.
And I think that, you know, because I think that some of this stuff.
Oh, that would be funny.
You know, you were throwing ideas, the syndication stuff especially, you were throwing ideas up against the wall and hoping they stuck because
mm-hmm.
your production budgets were fairly small.
Yeah.
Silk stockings. Remember things? I mean,
I remember that. You know, that was shot in Dallas, actually.
Well, okay. Well, see, yeah. and that was kind of, that was looking at, they were looking over at Showtime
mm-hmm.
and things like Red Shoe Diaries and some of the more adult programming and going, well, we can tease the audience a little bit.
Yeah.
So I mean, it was this really kind of weird thing.
Miami Vice. That hit right in the middle of all of that.
Yeah.
But see, the thing about it is, though, some of these movies that are based on the original stuff,
sure,
are crap.
Well,
and they don't do as well. Miami Vice didn't do all that great.
Well, okay, so
Dukes of Hazzard was a mess.
I think there's a couple of problems they're having here. One, they're either not taking they're looking at the material as it's a joke, okay,
mm-hmm.
and they're
Starsky
not
and Hutch
Starsky
was one
and
of those.
Hutch, Dukes of Hazzard, or you're not looking at it the right kind of joke. 21 Jump Street. 21 Jump Street embraced the ludicrousness. Mm-hmm. Of the original idea. I mean, just the, you know, we've got a bunch of cops who are so baby-faced, we can send them into high school, and no one's going to believe this person who clearly has to shave a lot is going to be a 14-year-old or 16-year-old or whatever.
Right.
You know, so they embraced the ridiculous nature of it and ran with it. I mean, they played with it in a way that the humor was slyer. You know, it actually had...
But I think 21 Jump Street turned itself in... It was a comedy... That wasn't a parody,
right? Right,
and that's the difference because Starsky and Hutch was a parody.
Yeah, well, I don't think some of these folks.
I don't
really...
think it was intended to be a parody, but it ended up being a parody.
I think some of these folks really they have the memory of really loving it as a kid,
mm-hmm.
and they go back and they watch the other episodes and go, "This is awful," because some of that stuff has not aged well. I mean, it's like going to watch, you know, did you watch The Love Boat? Yes, you
should.
Did.
Should I?
We all did. We all did.
We all did.
There were only three channels.
I remember when ABC used to do these things. They would do these two-hour special programs about the upcoming fall season. Do you remember those?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah.
I remember those. They were 2 hours long.
Mm-hmm.
Here are all of our new shows, and here are all our returning shows, and here are all our movies that we're going to be doing, and our miniseries. Here's all the lineup for the new fall season.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember one year was hosted by Cast of the Love Boat. They were in the transitional elements to host the show. You know, oh, that looks like great. I'm going to watch that show. Now, here, let's look at this other one.
Right.
You know, that kind of thing. But then nobody does that anymore.
Well, but you don't need to. I mean, because no. you got all the different news sites. You got little things. And you've got, Jason and I were he was working on some stuff on the computer, and I was watching the little 7-minute promo bit on the new Powers show. So you know, we're getting that stuff from other sources. I think that what ends up happening is that you end up with this nostalgia for the stuff that you like. But it's you have to find the right tone. I mean, there's a balancing act that some of these things really clearly haven't gotten.
Right.
I think 21 Jump Street got it right, where Dukes of Hazzard got it wrong. They understood, you know, the comedy, but then you have something like the Bionic Woman.
Yeah.
Where, in some respects, I kind of liked the new series.
Except it wasn't the Bionic Woman.
But it was a show about a woman with bionics, and you could have called it something else, and it might have had a better shot, because it was not a terrible storyline, and it was not. And as soon as you know, and then you got, you know, the whole thing between, you know, a previous Bionic Woman and there was some interesting stuff there. But it
I
was
think
carrying
when you get into the whole conspiracy stuff.
But I think you were carrying the weight. You were carrying the weight.
Yeah, the expectation.
Of the expectation. And I think that becomes... It's like when they were talking about the Jim Carrey $6 million Man movie.
Oh, yeah.
And
everybody thought that was a terrible idea.
Because as much as... I think there's some great stuff that Jim Carrey has done. I'm a huge fan of The Truman Show. I will happily watch The Majestic. I think those are excellent films. I mean, some of his comedy is really, really good. The man can make you laugh. But The $6 Million Man, you hear that he's cast in it and you're going... It's going to be one of those movies. You're just going to, you know. And I'll be perfectly honest, the only reason I saw 21 Jump Street is because several of my friends wanted to go see it, and I went. And I laughed.
Mm-hmm.
Because it was, you know, the comedy was handled well. And I think that you end up with a lot of this stuff where they're looking back through a filter, through rose-colored glasses.
It's the I'm hanging on to my youth glasses.
Yeah.
That's what it is. And I've said this before, is you've got these people, and yes, a lot of them are our age, but some of them are just a little bit older. You've got the baby boomers.
Sure.
The baby boomers who do not want to think of themselves as old.
Right.
And they're the ones that are sitting there going, I'm not old. I'm not old. I'm not old. Oh, hey, there's this show that I grew up watching. I loved it. Let's make that movie.
Yeah, I think that...
And that's what it is. They're hanging on to their youth with every tooth and nail they have left.
Well, I think there's also... I'm not going to argue with that. I think there's also a confusion. And I think that when you run into some of these shows that worked in the 1980s or the early 90s, that can't work anymore.
Like what?
Rebooting Fantasy Island.
They've done that a couple of times.
Well, as much as Malcolm McDowell as Mr. Rourke.
Yeah.
I watched the first few episodes of that, and I was like, this is really kind of interesting, because they were being kind of subversive about it. You know, they were adding a lot more darkness to the show. Basically.
Yeah, it was a lot more sinister.
Yeah, and actually, I really, really enjoyed that. But at the same time, I'm watching it going, it's very episodic. It's very much a, you know, every episode, you know, we're getting a soft reset. And it's just like, okay, I want a story. I want someone to be, you know, taking me someplace more than just 42 minutes of here's the thing, and then next week it's, 42 minutes of here's the thing, and, you know, I want something more.
But see, there's nothing wrong with episodic.
Well, no, there isn't, but...
Outside of an anthology show, you could still do an episodic type of series. You know, I think Knight Rider would still work. You could still do Knight Rider. Because eventually they added in the whole thing with Goliath and Carr and
I think you're going to have to
Knight's real son. What was his name?
Oh, goodness. Yeah,
the real one.
Well, I think that you run into the problem that audiences want a story, and they don't want. I think we've kind of had this development of the idea that things like comedy can have its, you know, nothing really happens. Nothing ever really changes.
Yeah.
Or if it does, it changes over a really long period of time, like, say, How I Met Your Mother or whatever, you know, where you've got, you know.
I think the other thing, too, is that we're in sequelitis, where everything has to be a trilogy. Everything has to be a series of films. You don't get the one-shot movie anymore.
Well,
Okay, 21 Jump Street.
Sure.
You tell one story.
Uh-huh.
That could very easily have just gone and been one and done.
Sure.
One and done.
Well, sure. But we've been in that state of
back
mind
to,
since
Back to the Future was supposed to be a one and done.
Right, but we've been in that state of mind since the late 70s. Okay. Star Wars, Superman, The Godfather. You know, these are things that.
Yeah, but there wasn't an expectation of sequels and trilogies and quadrilogies and stuff like there is now.
But studios discovered that they were profitable.
Yeah.
And as we've discussed more than once, studios are in the business of making money. And that's what they're supposed to do. I mean, they're
merchandising.
Called it. That too. But I think that
Spaceballs.
You know, but you know what?
But see, because Mel Brooks is talking about he wants to do a sequel.
But you know what?
He wants to shoot it.
Mel Brooks doing a sequel to Spaceballs actually makes me smile. Because when he's funny, my concern, though, is that when Mel Brooks is on,
that's
amazing.
The thing.
And when he's not, you know what? I laughed at Robin Hood Men in Tights. It's not a great movie. It's not even particularly a good movie. But I laughed a lot.
Speaking of which, Carrie Elwes is going to be here in Kansas City for Planet Comic Con 2015.
I know. And you know what? It pains me greatly to sit there and realize how old I was when Princess Bride came out.
Mm-hmm.
And how old I am now.
Uh-huh.
And it pleases me greatly how much I still really, really like that movie.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, we watched it the other day.
And how much that movie just makes me smile. In a cheerful, happy, non-cynical.
Never get involved in a land war in Asia.
You know, you gotta love subversive dialogue. Things that slip past you and all of a sudden you sit there and go, hang on a second.
Yeah. It's like, wait, what did he say? What? Huh?
So there's just, I mean, but I think we end up with this weird thing that there's also there's this mindset periodically that pops in, and you have something like RoboCop, okay, the RoboCop reboot,
mm-hmm.
or the you know in where
reboot sequel is
it's the reboot thing.
Yeah.
Now I understand. We've talked about if however people feel about the Star Trek movies, the new ones, the idea, and Jason and I have talked about this before, is that you know Star Trek is modern myth. Okay, it's our king. It's this mm-hmm. culture's King Arthur. It's this culture's Robin Hood.
I'd say Star Wars is more.
Well,
than
that too. That. But I mean, Star Trek, and Star Wars. These are the myths that we build. Okay.
Okay.
And that we keep retelling King Arthur stories. And we keep retelling, and every you know, there's always a new interpretation. Star Trek and Star Wars are like that. So when we get the new Star Wars films, I'm not bothered because that's what we do with our modern myths. When they rebooted Star Trek, I wasn't bothered because that's what we do. It's how well they work is the next question.
Mm-hmm.
But so this didn't bother me. RoboCop is not modern myth. Okay? The first RoboCop is a fantastic movie with incredible sarcasm and dark humor.
Yeah.
And for the time, extremely brutal violence that was meant to make a point. And you have all these things that combine together to make this film that really, really worked.
Yeah.
And
then they went and made a second one.
Well, they made the second. Well, actually, the second, I can handle the second one to a degree. The third one, the spin-off series and all the different things, you know,
right.
they were trying to recapture something that was really, really hard to capture, and the first one got right, okay?
Yeah.
So now we have, you know.
Well, it's because the first one was shot in Dallas.
Yeah, that's what it is. then we have this reboot that comes along, and it's like, it's like they know the tune, but they can't play the music.
Yeah,
and
that's the case for a lot of these.
Well, and I think they miss out on some of the things that made it work in the first place, mm-hmm. and some of that actually is when it was made. What was going on? RoboCop was, there was a cultural component to RoboCop.
Yeah.
There was a time when you're looking at, you know,
there's a lot of social commentary.
Yeah, okay, there's the war on crime, there's the war on drugs, there was a lot of stuff happening.
Well, and that was when we were starting to get shows like Entertainment Tonight and PM Magazine,
right.
And you had those
soundbite little blip things. Yeah.
And the really bright uppity hosts and
sure.
everything was happy and oh yeah we're talking about
15 people died in a pile up
yeah and that's
how's the weather
and that's you where know. It was
exactly
and that's where we got
and there was a lot of humor in that you could play with, and I think that when you pull things out of that context, we have a different set of contexts
mm-hmm.
now,
right?
And I don't think that the reboot tapped into it. Now, if the first RoboCop movie had never happened, okay, let's say that film had never happened, which is a dark and terrible world, and we will not dwell on that. But the reboot,
if that had been the very first one,
would have been it wasn't a great movie, but it would have been an adequate sci-fi thriller about a cyborg guy.
Yeah. Now, the one thing that I'm looking forward to on Terminator Genesis is the fact that it's taking the original.
Mm-hmm.
And subverting it into something completely new, which I think is a unique way to approach doing not necessarily a reboot, but a sequel that, you know, granted, you've got the out of having a time travel component.
Well, but at
so
this
you
point,
can do that kind of thing.
I think at this point, a lot of people look, whether rightly or wrongly, they look at the timeline for the Terminator films and say, this doesn't make any sense.
Right.
And then, of course, if you watch the TV show, you know, for this era,
even more so.
It all becomes this mess. And I think that the only way you could do something like this and make it not be, oh God, another Terminator film. What are we doing? And bring back Arnold is to sit there and just go, okay, we're just going to go crazy.
It's going to blow the whole thing wide open.
And
this does it. Looks like it does it. Where mm-hmm. and it looks like it actually might do it well.
Well, remember how we were all just looking at the name of it.
Yeah.
Terminator Genesis. What is Genesis? And then we saw the trailer and we're like, hang on.
Yeah.
this doesn't look terrible.
When the van comes through the sporting goods store.
Yeah.
You're like, wait a minute. Something's different.
But I think that they, again, it's kind of like 21 Jump Street. They looked at the original source material
mm-hmm.
and they saw what worked and they went, okay, if we're going to do this.
Yeah.
And we're going to be able to look at ourselves in the mirror afterwards and not say, I have betrayed my childhood. and I think that, you know, again, we haven't seen the film. It could be rubbish.
Yeah.
But I think that you end up with that potential just by looking at the trailer and going,
yeah, I'm cautiously optimistic.
Just make this work.
You know, speaking of the RoboCop thing, I mentioned it was in Dallas.
Mm-hmm.
I remember the first time I saw the movie.
Yeah.
And when the first time they show the OCP building,
mm-hmm.
I thought, oh, so that's what they did with City Hall. because City Hall is in Dallas has such a distinctive architecture. It's that angled front
right.
of that building. And everything above that is all matte painting in that picture.
Right.
And it's noticeably a matte painting. And then I look at it and I go, oh, that's not what City Hall looks like. I see what they did there, but I see, because you could see that City Hall, that's not.
Yeah.
It was funny to watch.
Well, and I think that you end up with there's a recognition that there was some really, really interesting storytelling coming out
mm-hmm.
at that time. I think that in many ways, there was a sense of staleness to a lot of movies and some of these smaller films.
Yeah.
Star Wars was a smaller film.
It was
RoboCop was a smaller film. Terminator was a smaller film. Alien was a smaller film.
Yeah, all of those.
They were all, and in many ways, they were, you know, Arnold Schwarzenegger.
Blade Runner,
yeah. Well, Blade Runner was pretty expensive for the time, but, you know, you look at Sigourney Weaver. Who?
Yeah. A lot of these.
Arnold Schwarzenegger.
He's a bodybuilder.
Yeah. Was that a Conan movie?
Yeah.
Yeah. Who saw the Conan movie? I didn't see the Conan movie. Yes, you did. You know, we all saw the Conan movie.
And that remake didn't work very well.
No, even though the remake actually was not terrible.
Hmm.
But the thing is, I think you get... but neither did I can't remember the name of it. But there was a Solomon Kane. I actually liked Solomon Kane. Mm-hmm. It's not a remake, but it was another fantasy period piece. It doesn't quite play. But you end up with this stuff that I think that some of it really was audiences looking for something they were not getting from standard. I mean, you know, you got a lot of dramas in the 80s. You got a lot of, you know. But that was also the explosion of horror as well.
Yeah. Speaking of explosions.
Boom.
Boom. Actually, it's not. Speaking of childhoods.
Yes.
We're going to take a break, and you can think about all of the toys that you can have to appeal to your own inner child from superherostuff.com. We'll take a break. You can hear from them. They are our sponsor.
Lots of many, many cool things over there.
And we do appreciate their continued support. Superherostuff.com is the website, and we are going to take a break, refill coffee mugs, and we will be back with the rest of H2O. Stand by.
You're listening to H2O on Sci-Fi for Me Radio.
That is the sound of another satisfied customer getting his superhero stuff teleported to his doorstep from superherostuff.com. When you need your Batcave or Fortress of Solitude to be bigger on the inside, jump on the World Wide Web and head over to superherostuff.com at warp speed. Licensed merchandise from across the fandom multiverse.
Oh, this is so cool!
Only at superherostuff.com.
Hey everyone, Leslie Walker of Sci-Fi for Me here, just to give you a little reminder that our super smart crew members share their thoughts weekly on the DC shows Gotham, The Flash, and Arrow. Check out our podcast where we discuss these shows and story arcs, character development, plot twists, misses, and wins. Or if you'd rather check in for a quick recap read, we have you covered there as well. So join us for some DC-flavored morsels at scififorme.com, your portal to the science fiction multiverse.
Sci-Fi for Me Radio, transmitting by the power of Grayskull.
My 13-year-old says, "This is the greatest theme song he's ever heard."
Yeah, I don't know if that's true, but I do enjoy it.
I like the Battlestar Galactica theme better.
One thing you can definitely say about a lot of the 80s TV shows, they had good themes.
Yeah, they did. And they had title sequences.
They did.
And they had the episode titles at the beginning of the show.
Right.
Which you don't have anymore.
I was partial to the Equalizer.
Oh, yeah. Now, that was a good one, too. Yeah, that was a good one. That's a good one.
Da-da-da-da-da.
Yep.
Yeah, so I think...
I'm waiting for the Magnum P.I. movie.
You know, there's a chance it could happen.
The Magnum P.I. movie and the Rockford Files movie.
You know what? A Rockford Files movie...
What? Wait, weren't they talking about that at one point?
They were talking about that at one point.
Who was supposed to play Rockford?
I can't remember. But but you know what? The Maverick, the movie, before Mel Gibson went insane. The fact that we actually had a fairly well done Maverick film, which I thought was really, really nice. Actually, I enjoyed that film a great deal. So you end up with
Vince Vaughn was going to be Jim Rockford.
Oh, that's right. See, and there was a commercial for some film while we were watching Carter tonight, and we were commenting about, remember when he used to be somebody? He used to be a good actor. And I'm being completely unfair because I have no desire to watch the film that whatever it was that we were advertised, it was some comedy. I suppose he can still play it. I don't know. It's just
I could see him playing Rockford more than most actors.
He's just gotten attached to these kind of bad films.
Goofy.
Yeah.
Goofy,
which is, you know,
bad films.
Make the films you want to make when you're an actor, I think. It's all power to him. But
yeah. Who else could play Jim Rockford?
Wow, I have to really think about that. Because Because you have to have that balance between someone who is, you know, mm-hmm. In many ways.
Who'd play Angel?
Oh, wow.
That would be the one. I mean, Rockford, okay, fine. But, you know, the.
Right.
Especially in those days, those shows, a lot of the time, your lead character was better for the people around him.
Oh, yeah, of course. Yeah, yeah.
You know, Noah Beery is his dad, and you've got.
I have to really think about that.
Dennis, his cop buddy.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, who do you get to play that?
Well, and this is an example of the kind of thing we're talking about, which is, you know, you would have to. It would be very, very tempting, apparently, for them to play this, you know, that kind of thing with.
Very broad humor.
Very broad humor, and not and forgetting the fact that there was a lot of humor in the show, but it was not.
It was organic
yeah.
to.
It was,
this
yeah, it was
this
organic
is real life. These yeah. are funny things that happen in life.
And that's just understanding what the source material is. I think that one of the we watched not too long ago the preview for The New Man from U.N.C.L.E., which seems to have a sense of the original show.
Yeah, it really does.
And I think that's that's a very good thing, actually.
And I'm even going to go so far as to say it sounds like Henry Cavill
mm-hmm.
is doing a very good impression of Robert Vaughn. Have you noticed? Sounds like Robert Vaughn.
Well, I think he's got the vocal patterns down. There's an understanding of where people pause.
Yeah.
Well,
even the tone of his voice,
mm-hmm.
It's there. It sounds like.
So I think that, you know, that's something that is, and of course, and that's a show that had a lot of humor in it. Had a lot of humor in it and a lot of, mm-hmm. of knowingness about it. So it could have been very, very easily gone off the rails. But certainly from the preview, it looks as though they've got a sense of the tone, which is great because it's, you know, it's Guy Ritchie. So it could go either way. I'm not the biggest fan of his Sherlock Holmes movies. They're okay. They're just a little too Holmes as action hero. But at the same time, you know, they're entertaining. So I don't know. That appears to be a sense of somebody who's got the sense of the right tone. And that seems to be the problem for a lot of this stuff. Now that's 60s though. This is we're going back and we've done that before. We had Get Smart. The Get Smart
right with Steve Carell.
With Steve Carell, which wasn't bad.
No.
But we had also had the Stepford Wives.
Yeah.
Which was a disappointing adaptation at best. I don't know.
Well, and now, you know, well, you've got another Mission Impossible 5
right.
is on its ways and mm-hmm. is starting to ramp up production. We've been talking about, you know, a lot of stories from the 80s and the 90s.
Mm-hmm.
And now with The Man from U.N.C.L.E., and we still got James Bond out there.
Sure.
And
but they reinvent Bond. They reinvent Bond every 10 years or so.
Right, but Bond's 50 years old. He's a product of the 60s to start with. You've got the Star Trek reboot.
Mm-hmm.
Thunderbirds are getting a new show.
In a very uncanny valley kind of way.
And it looks pretty cool.
It looks pretty cool until you look in their cold, dead eyes.
Well,
their cold, dead, soulless eyes.
But
they're cold, dead, sitting on the end of your bed, hungering for your soul.
But it looks—that's what the show looked like. I mean, that was the original show.
These are scarier.
They're faithful CG representations of the mannequins.
Slightly more terrifying than the original terrifying doll. No, but the production design looks fantastic.
Yeah, it does. Well, and you and I were talking the other day. When was it? I guess it was last week. We were talking about The Man from U.N.C.L.E.
Mm-hmm.
And you'd mentioned. Oh, no, it was. It was last week. You were talking about the fact that we have yet to see an Avengers movie. And not Avengers like...
Steed,
yeah, you're talking John Steed, Emma Peel.
Right.
Who would you get to play Emma Peel?
Oh, goodness. There's a lot of people... oddly enough, there's a lot of women who could play it.
For some reason, Elizabeth Hurley popped into my head.
I see that. She's exactly it. That she's the first one that pops into my head. Because she's got the... she can do
our
drama.
Our luck, they'd cast Taylor Swift or somebody like that. Because you know that's what's going to happen.
I think I just had an aneurysm. I'm not entirely sure. You're going to need to call a doctor.
or Vanessa Hudgens or
they already made the Bad Avengers movie, and they need to which was an incredibly squandered opportunity.
This is the one with Ralph Fiennes and Uma Thurman.
This is a fantastic example of how not to do it. This is a fantastic example of not understanding the source material.
Yes.
Because you actually had a really good cast.
That got squandered.
That got completely squandered. And, I mean, Ralph Fiennes and Uma Thurman, and you couldn't get chemistry? But it's Ralph Fiennes and Uma Thurman. These are both very, very talented actors, period, let alone. They can fake chemistry. And yet it's just, I mean, there's just nothing there. Visually, that film's pretty.
Yeah. Now, Patrick McNee is not here anymore, is he?
No.
No, he's
no.
He's
I
dead.
Believe he's. Was it just a few years ago?
Yeah. But who would you get? Oh, you know, it would be funny.
What?
Pierce Brosnan as Jack Steed.
Well, you know what? That actually, he's a little. Too, I think he. No, and this, and, you know,
you think he's too old?
He's a little too old for the part.
You think?
Although.
I don't know. McNee wasn't young when he did the show.
No, but Brosnan's in his late 50s at this point.
Yeah, something like that.
Yeah, McNee I think was in his 40s. I think there's probably almost a 10-year difference. I would.
Or bring back Ralph Fiennes. Ralph Fiennes. Do it again.
No, Ralph Fiennes is busy doing M.
We sat and watched Skyfall the other night.
Yeah.
And it was my first time seeing it because I missed it in the movie. I didn't see it in the theaters. And to bring the end when he walks into the office,
mm-hmm.
I looked at that and went, oh, I see what they're doing.
Yep.
Because that was a nice touch. You know, oh, there's the door.
Yeah.
And they walk in, and then Ralph Fiennes is M. I was like, oh, okay, I see what they're doing.
And it worked.
It does.
I mean, it was an acknowledgement of the past.
Yeah.
And it brings
everything full circle.
Yeah.
Because now that they're introducing Spectre in the next one,
mm-hmm.
you can do Dr. No and all of those all over again.
Right.
I mean, not saying that they will,
right.
but you could, because now the sequels have become the prequels.
Right. Yeah. It's very elegant.
Very clever.
There's a few logic problems with the Skyfall script.
Still works though.
Oh yeah, it still works.
My kid saw the first time they saw the Aston Martin.
Yeah,
he goes, "That's the car." Yes, that's the car. And then they blew it up. He's like, "What? What are they doing to the car?"
Well, of course, you know the fact that shit, very very quickly we get our M makes a reference to the ejection seat.
Oh yeah, go ahead, eject me. See if I care. that was so her.
Oh yeah,
that was so much that character.
Well, and you know I think that we forget too often that we have some really really amazing talented people who are not often they're not your big flashy. Action heroes or sexy actresses. You have actresses like Judi Dench, Dame Judi Dench, who is her vision is going.
Oh yeah,
her vision is going is apparently almost gone. So she's basically retiring from acting, and it's an amazing loss. That's an incredible loss because she is just a joy to watch. I mean, she is amazing. She is she just blows you away on the screen every single time she's on camera.
You know who could play Steed?
Mm.
And he's already doing it. It's Colin Firth.
Oh yeah,
because he's basically doing it in The Kingsman.
That's true. Yes,
kinda. That's
actually
a similar type of character.
Yes, he definitely could. Now, who would you? Okay, so him and.
But now it just hit me though.
Yeah.
Because of where we are in our time. Because of where Hollywood is in their day. The only actor that you could get to play Jack Steed would be Benedict Cumberbatch. Because he plays all the characters. He plays all the parts. But yeah, I think Colin Firth would be a good
I think Colin Firth, Steve. And
what about Hugh Laurie?
Or
is he too old?
No, I think Hugh Laurie... I think the problem with Hugh Laurie is that his best... A part of me, I think...
Because, I mean, look at his work in Stuart Little.
Oh, yeah.
Very uppity, very, very put together,
very
contained. And then make him British, put him in a black suit.
You mean he's already British?
It could work. In Stuart Little, he wasn't British.
Right.
You take that character, you make him British, and put him in a suit, and he's Jack Steed. But I think Colin Firth would be a good one.
Colin Firth, Colin Firth and Elizabeth Hurley. And
not a bad combination.
No, that'd be a fantastic combination. Because honestly, I think they could play that subtle flirtation thing without it being a cheat.
What about Kate Beckinsale? Is she too young?
No, I think she could do it. She's in her 30s.
Catherine Zeta-Jones.
She would certainly work too.
I don't know.
I can
Hayley Atwell.
Well, yes, also true.
Sure, why not?
I think
that's coming. I think we're going to get an Avengers. They're not going to call it the Avengers.
Steed and Peel probably, just because it flows better than Steel and.
Yeah. Well, but if they're faithful to the source material, Steed was the lead character, and Emma Peel was his.
Well, and there partner, of course there were several partners of his in the course of the show.
She was the most popular one.
Well, yeah, but I mean, in many ways, because of the revolving nature of the cast,
question.
Yeah,
because we've been talking a little bit about James Bond. Now we're talking about the Avengers. Are those, in your mind, are those genre shows?
Avengers? Sure. The
British spy Avengers.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. James Bond.
Because they had robots, and they had mind control, and they had, they had all that sort of thing. A lot of the British spy shows crossed the line fairly regularly from being, they weren't as narrow a genre. I mean, the Bond movies didn't really get there. But you have shows like The Prisoner.
Mm-hmm.
You could very easily argue The Prisoner is science fiction.
Oh, yeah.
You could also very easily argue that it's a psychedelic drug trip. Or you could argue that it's a... or you could argue that it's a mind control spy show. But,
Survivors is...
Oh, sure.
It is science fiction in its premise.
Mm-hmm.
There's this virus, this disease that goes out. But most of the show is a survival show. It's not a science fiction show.
Especially first season.
Yeah.
Really, the first season of the show. I think that you
and you're talking about the original.
The original, right. Yeah. And the remake wasn't terrible.
Mm. It just wasn't as good.
Well,
the second season of the original kind of fell apart.
Well, the problem was is that Terry Nation left it.
Yeah.
So, The British, one of the best things and worst things about British programming is that British programming only has so much money. And what that required was that they focus on story.
Mm-hmm.
Because if you're 1970s, 1980s Doctor Who, you've got only so much corridor you can run up and down, and the sets might be a little wobbly, but you get Keys of Marinus, and you get... Castrovalva, and you get the Twin Dilemma, and you get all these different, you get
Trial of the Time
Lord. You get, You get Robot. You get,
Logopolis.
Logopolis. You get some really, really good stuff. And you get some, you know, uneven stories. So the Key to Time. You get all this different stuff. But if you're other kinds of programming, and this continues to this day, the BBC's budget for shows is nowhere near what American shows get spent. Mm-hmm. Doctor Who's got an amazing budget for a British show right now. But it's also, you know, a huge tentpole for the BBC.
Well, plus, you know, with Doctor Who, you have all of the merchandising, all the licensing, and everything else that you don't get with a regular BBC show.
But a lot
so they can afford to do a little bit more and splurging on that.
Sure, but when they're doing science fiction, you know, they're going to spend the time focusing on getting the story right.
Yeah.
Because they're not going to be able to blow us away with special effects because they don't have the budget for it.
Although we are seeing with shows like The Flash, it's getting a lot easier, getting better to do some of these science fiction special effects on limited budgets because the Firestorm effects are really good.
Yeah, the technology's come a long way, and you can, as long as you're judiciously applying your money. I'm still waiting for the Flash clip show.
You think there's going to be one?
No, I actually don't. But I think it's, you know,
it'll be the next crossover with Arrow.
There we go.
That'll be the clip show.
So I think when you see. Oh, well, you know what? Okay, here's something I want.
How do you do a clip show in a show full of flashbacks?
Exactly.
right?
But here's the show that they haven't remade that I really want them to remake for a British show. Quartermass.
Oh. Yeah.
See, and that's give it a budget. Make it a 6-episode six-episode show.
And tie it into Doctor Who because it is.
Either. I think they wanted to do that in a couple of different ways. But I think they needed to.
I remember seeing, what was it? It was the Seventh Doctor. The Dalek episode when they came back to Totter's Lane.
Totter's Lane.
And it was what was that? Attack of the Daleks? What was that episode? Ace with the baseball bat beating the Dalek in the school. They were back in the school.
Right.
And in that episode, some of the unit people mentioned Quartermass. There's a direct connection in the script.
There was actually supposed to be a tie-in. They were actually going to have a real...
They were going to do a crossover at one point, weren't they?
Yeah, they were going to actually connect the two. And I think they were... I can't remember what the reason why they weren't able to do that. But, yeah, I mean, that's an incredible science fiction show that I think there was a... I believe there was a live TV version a few years ago or within the last 10 years or something like that. But nothing like on the level of just a full blown, you know.
Well, what about
throw money at it miniseries?
What about Blake Seven?
See, Blake Seven has been caught kind of in a limbo for a while because they've talked about redoing it. In fact, there was just a talk about
Sci-Fi was going to do it.
Yeah, I think the problem with Blake Seven is that
Remembrance of the Daleks.
No, I think
that's what it was.
The problem with Blake Seven is while it is a story that I think would be really, really cool to tell, is that its balancing act of being not being about Star Trek and being about Star Trek at the same time. Because for the folks who haven't seen Blake Seven, the Federation in Blake Seven is basically the evil version of the Federation in Star Trek. And in fact, there's a...
It's kind of like the Alliance in Firefly.
Yeah. There's a logo. There's the artwork for Blake Seven has a Federation, the Enterprise...
The Delta Shield
turned on its side. And the other thing is that If you're true to the character and what was some of the original intention that Terry Nation had, you basically have to set Blake Seven up as Blake himself up as a child molester, because that's what he's framed for,
right?
And so I mean, it's you've got an entire cast of anti-heroes, which you can do because audiences are more primed for that, because there's been some really fun shows.
Guardians of the Galaxy.
Yeah. But these are guys who have all been accused of murder or rape or child molesting, and they're on the run from... We've seen a lot of this stuff before. You know, we've got Guardians of the Galaxy, we've got Firefly, we've got Farscape, we've got, you know, a lot of these things have Blake 7 DNA in them.
Mm-hmm.
I think you can run into the problem of not tripping yourself over like John Carter did.
You mean the marketing?
The marketing.
Yeah.
And not recognizing the fact that, you know,
this came first.
Well, and then you have, you know, you would have to really figure out how you want to go, because they never came back from the season finale, from the series finale that was the series finale.
Yeah.
You know.
Well, how do you come back from that?
Well, they planned to. There were plans. There were, you know, what's his name who played Avon? Has written a couple of books.
Yeah.
Continuing the story. So it's actually been planned. I would love to see a really, really quality series made, but I honestly would almost want to see like an 8-episode, 12-episode, and that's it.
Oh, yeah. You don't want to do it as a long anything. You do the limited series. That, well, and that seems to be the model for any of them anymore.
Well, because you can spend your money. You can spend your money better.
Yeah.
You know, and you go and you don't... You know,
Miracle Day.
Yeah. You don't try to tread your water quite so much. That we, you know, we saw with Agent Carter, or we saw with Miracle Day, or we saw, you know, it's like, why are you giving me so many episodes of padding?
Yeah.
So, you know, stick to your True Detective and your Penny Dreadful, you know, 6-8 episodes in and out kind of storytelling, and get a good cast and spend your money on the special effects you need to spend it. So, in fact, I'd like to see some of these older series come back a lot more than I want to see some of these 80s series come back. Because really, you know, because you know the Airwolf movie's coming.
Blue Thunder. You remember Blue Thunder?
See, Blue Thunder was a movie.
And it became a series.
Roy Schneider.
And it lost
part of the paranoia of the movie by becoming a series.
Right.
You lost that.
It was
sense
just a
of,
cop show. Yeah.
Yeah, because in the, you know, there's that fear, especially of course now in the wonderful world of the NSA, it'd be like, just a helicopter, really?
Yeah, a helicopter with a couple of drones attached to it.
Are you watching this movie on your computer? Because we're watching you through the camera.
What are we gonna? How about the Simon and Simon movie?
The problem with the Simon and Simon movie is like that's kind of like making a Matt Houston movie. Okay.
If it gets Pamela Hensley back,
well,
I'll take the Matt Houston movie.
I am all in favor of that. I liked Matt Houston. Guess what? Can I tell you what any of the episodes were about?
No.
No.
But Pamela Hensley was in them.
That's right.
And then she retires. She marries this guy. She does a cookbook, and then she disappears.
Well, she can do that. She can do that. But the thing is that there was we come back to this thing. There was a time, this one in the 80s, 70s and 80s, you could have shows that didn't really have a shelf life.
Yeah.
Because you weren't worried
about... You weren't expecting them to.
Well, you weren't, yeah.
It was make enough to have syndication deals, and that was it. And that was all really
well, yeah.
was the big concern. That
and
was
it was. You weren't worried about VHS?
No.
Because some of these series, you know, there's like 60 episodes of Doctor Who. It's like 15 stories or something like that. There's all this chunk of Doctor Who missing because nobody thought to save it, or they taped over it, or they threw away the tapes.
Right.
It's not the only show like that. BBC was notorious for doing that sort of thing. But there's plenty of shows where you...
But it was just a show.
It was just a show. That's right. So you weren't planning on having... Or God forbid, you know, nobody was worried about saving the masters or keeping the quality. Because so you look at some movies, some big-budget Hollywood films, and like... Wow, the VHS or the DVD looks terrible. That's the best copy we got.
Mm-hmm.
Because nobody saved the good one. Or the same thing with a lot of television. So you just lose. We weren't thinking of that sort of thing. Nobody, right. Nobody was. So,
well, unless you've got it in the where is it? The Library of Congress, the film archives.
Mm-hmm.
But that's still a limited collection.
Oh, sure.
You don't have every single film that's ever
no,
been made.
No,
in
goodness,
there.
No. But a lot of television. It's just, you know, so a lot of television. Is
but I think that could be the next wave. Are the 60s shows. Because, well,
my
I mean,
three
think
sons.
About it. Think about it. We have the shows that we grew up on
mm-hmm.
were first run shows. Knight Rider, Dukes sure. of Hazzard, mm-hmm. all of those. Those were first run shows. Blue Thunder,
yeah.
not Blue Thunder, Airwolf.
Right.
Riptide. Remember Riptide?
Oh, wow. remember Stingray?
It had a robot. It had a robot, so it's science fiction, right?
Stingray.
You
one
owe,
season.
You owe me a favor. It was a cool car, though.
Oh, well, yeah.
Well, Voyagers.
Yeah.
Remember Voyagers?
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
See, the thing is, well, there was...
But see, you've got those first-run mm-hmm. shows that we grew up on.
Right.
That's what's being remade and rebooted and all of this.
Mm-hmm.
Next wave, after these go their, you know, go their way.
The Nick at Night wave.
It's the stuff that we grew up on in syndication.
Right.
The stuff that we found in reruns.
Yep. It was
that's
the,
next.
It was the cable explosion.
Yeah.
It was the cable explosion on the classic
TV
shows.
Land.
TV Land. The problem is...
You can't do that on television.
The problem with that is, you know, we've already had the I Dream of Jeannie movie.
No, we haven't. We've had a Bewitched movie. We haven't had I Dream of Jeannie. They talked about it.
You're right.
And at one point, Jenny Garth was going to play...
That's because the Bewitched film was tanked, and they sat there and went, ugh. But we had the Beverly Hillbillies movie.
We had the Beverly Hillbillies
movie. We had more
movie.
Than one.
Yes.
We had the Flintstones movie, of which there were, what, three?
Three, and then the last one went direct to DVD.
I okay.
But see, the thing about it is, though, consider the age of the people that are making it. Now the people our age are in charge,
mm-hmm.
and they haven't made those movies yet. They haven't made the rerun cycle movies
that's
yet.
That's true. 10, 15 years has gone by.
Yeah.
It's time for the reboot.
Well, yeah. Why, well, yeah.
Oh, I know. And there's a rumor right now that we're getting a second Fantastic Four film, no matter if the first one tanks or not. And
oh, it's already got a release date.
Oh yeah, I know, but I mean, but the rumor is that it's going to happen whether the first one tanks or not, and it might be a reboot if the first one tanks. So they're covering themselves there, I guess.
Well, because I was, you know, you get these fan trailers,
oh, sure.
of different things, and of course we found the one for Knight Rider because my kid, you know, as soon as he latches onto it, he's doing right. So now he's wondering, well, what kind of car would Kit be? Because they don't make the Firebird anymore. You know, and I was like, well, you could put him in a Dodge Challenger. They did the Ford Mustang. He's like, that's not hot rod enough. I was like, are you kidding me? That's a Ford Mustang. It's one of the only muscle cars that got left. I mean, come on.
That's true.
But, yeah, you know, now you've got, let's see, we have the Rockford Files still needs to be made.
Yeah.
From the 70s. We had $6 Million Man come in.
Mm-hmm.
But in the 60s, besides the Avengers, you got Thunderbirds, Lost in Space. Is it about time for a Lost in Space reboot?
Well, you know what? You could. I think that you would need to play it really seriously. You need to play it like the pilot. The pilot. Like the first... Well,
like the first unaired pilot that nobody has ever seen.
Right, where Dr. Smith was a villain.
Yeah. I've seen that one.
Yeah, so have I.
Much better than the rest of the series.
Oh, sure. Right, well, you know, the serious science fiction was not necessarily something they were looking for in television right then.
Right.
You know, you get the Twilight Zone was about as close as you're going to get.
And then, as the show progressed, it became more and more about the kid and the robot.
Well, it was the Doctor.
The Doctor.
Yeah, yeah.
It was the Dr. Smith show.
Yeah.
Warning. What else was out there? Oh, well, we've got Mission Impossible. Is out there now.
Sure. I Spy is going to be in limbo until the Cosby thing plays out.
But they already tried that because the Eddie Murphy Eddie Murphy, Owen Wilson.
Right.
That was I Spy. That was that. That was I Spy.
That's true.
Which was not very good.
No, no. Well.
Well, and I didn't even realize when they did the movie, I didn't even realize that it was a reboot of the TV show until after I was reading some stuff about it that this was based on the TV show. I was like, what?
Right.
Are you, what? Are you kidding me? That's not, what?
Well, but, you know, in some of this stuff, you can't, they look at some of these things and decide that they can't do it that way because A, audiences won't get it, or B, we've got to update this or update that. I think that some of this stuff works really, really well if you pull it into a modern setting. Yeah. You could do the Rockford Files now.
Oh, sure.
The core of that doesn't change. The trappings might.
Right.
You know,
A different car, maybe.
Yeah, but the
well, even then, maybe not.
Yeah, that's true.
You know?
But the, you know, the character is the same.
Yeah.
You know? you could do Maverick now.
Big Valley.
Oh, see? See, the thing is, bringing back Westerns.
Money.
Yeah, well, yeah, horses are expensive.
Yeah. Well, you'd have to build the towns.
Yeah.
Because they don't exist anymore.
Yeah,
they don't have those. I mean, we've got one here.
Is the Deadwood City. Is the Deadwood set still standing?
I don't know. I think is that one, and then is Silverado still intact?
I'm not sure.
Is that town?
But
still,
you know what? We've got our friend Cowboy out in Leavenworth, outside of Leavenworth, who's built a 1800s town.
Yeah.
That a lot of the History Channel uses.
Larry Culbertson.
Yep.
Has that out there.
Yep. And it's a lot of the.
So we got Blake 7.
Yeah.
We've got Lost in Space.
Sure.
What else from the 60s? I Dream of Jeannie.
Mm-hmm.
Genre stuff.
Quatermass. You could do at least two series off Quatermass.
What was the other one that, Mr. Bean, Rowan Atkinson. What did he do? What was that other one he did?
Blackadder. No, don't. No,
wouldn't reboot Blackadder?
I would not reboot Blackadder for one very simple reason. Blackadder was a comedy series that worked because of the cast.
Right.
I think that if you were to try, you could try. Okay, would you remake Jeeves and Wooster?
Freebie and the Bean. You remember Freebie and the Bean?
Oh, wow. They are remaking Pete's Dragon.
That's true, and it's a musical. They're doing it as a musical too.
Have you seen the cast though?
I know
the cast is amazing. Like,
how did you get them?
I don't have an inherent problem with remakes. We talked about this before. There's, if you've got a new way to tell a good story, remakes happen. We've been remaking.
Wizard of Oz was a remake.
Well, everything's a remake. Okay, we've got, you know, you ask certain biblical scholars, the great flood is a remake from Gilgamesh. Okay, so it's, you know, humans tell stories, and we tell the same stories over and over and over, and we tell them, and we get in trouble for being on the news and doing that too. Right. But topical humor. But
of course, some people would say that the media are all lying anyway.
Some people would say that the audience is letting him do it.
That's true.
We're not lying to you. We're telling you the truth. We're telling you that some of this stuff is going to be really good and some of it's going to be garbage.
Yeah.
But you just got to do it right. You got to recognize that sometimes the tone needs to be exactly like it was. You've got to capture that, and sometimes you're it's okay for you to run with sit there and go, no, we're not doing it like that.
Well, I think you look at something like Land of the Lost.
Right.
Tremendous opportunity to do something that would have been, it probably would have worked better than Jurassic Park did. On some levels.
If you played that series, do you realize what a nightmare that is? You have got a science fiction horror film right there.
Yeah, exactly.
You could have the audience just squirming and screaming because you're trapped in the past. Yeah. You don't know, and you're being chased by
dinosaurs and Sleestak.
Yeah,
I mean, you're sure. Yeah,
I mean, but no, that's not what we got.
No,
we got this other thing.
And as soon as I heard Will Ferrell, playing Rick Marshall. I knew what kind of movie we were going to get. I was like, no. I checked out at that moment. I was like, no, that's not going to be Land of the Lost that I want to see.
And yet, if you give him the right material, he's an amazing dramatic actor.
I want to see a Dr. Shrinker movie.
Oh, wow.
Remember? Dr. Shrinker? Or the Bungaloos?
Oh, well, you know, have you heard the Sid and Marty Krofft stuff is starting to get remade.
Yeah, yeah. They've been talking about an H.R. Puffin stuff for a long time.
Yeah, but, well.
Sigmund and the Sea Monsters is the one that's actually going into production.
Which tells you one important thing.
We're scraping the bottom of the barrel?
I'm saying that apparently...
Because that was all 60s, wasn't it? Late 60s, early 70s?
Yeah.
Yeah, Lost Saucer.
Oh, God. Yeah, some things should not be remade. Okay,
Far Out Space Nuts.
Some things should just be left alone. Step away from the terrible, terrible nightmare fuel.
But see, that's the kind of stuff that you can turn into parody and it's okay.
Oh, yeah.
You could completely go wild, crazy, silly with those shows.
They used to joke that the people who made those shows were high when they made them.
And I can believe it.
Yeah. I mean, that was kind of that was the running gag that may or may not have been true. And so that sort of thing, you can go completely nuts.
Those are the ones you could even break the fourth wall.
Play them completely. No.
We know exactly what we're doing here, wink, wink.
Play it completely straight in the vein of Lovecraft. There's your nightmare fuel.
Well, and really, though, I mean, if you take the core nugget of an idea, like the Lost Saucer.
Sure.
All right. You could turn that into a scary... We are lost in... Well, it's lost in space.
Right. I think you... You have to make a decision when you're looking at some of this stuff. When you were looking at some of these really classic things. Okay.
Like Space 1999.
Space 1999. But you look at something like that people wouldn't necessarily touch right now, like I Spy. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
And you're perfectly understandable why you wouldn't necessarily want to remake that right now because of
right.
You know,
the Cosby thing,
advertising. Right. It becomes connections, right?
Right.
But at the same time, you could still tell the story of two agents. Set in the 60s,
mm-hmm.
So you have the potential to deal with the race conflict, and you have the potential to deal with the fact that, you know, people may not be taking the black character seriously.
Right.
Or respecting him, and have that actually be, you know, part of the story, do all that stuff. You could do that without it being I Spy.
Yeah, but then you get people saying, then you get the accusations that they just copied it.
But you know what? I think that if you had a strong enough story and treated it in a...
I don't think it's transformative enough. You wouldn't be able to do it.
Maybe
without
not.
Making it an iSpy.
Maybe not. But you don't actually have to call it iSpy. You can basically have them be a different kind of agent, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Set it in Europe. I don't know. You know, I mean, there's ways to do it. There's ways to tell the same kind of story without using those characters. Although, if it were me, I'd wait a little while longer and hopefully use those characters.
Yeah.
But you know, I mean,
the Saint. We had a Saint movie with Val Kilmer,
which really many people felt was not really a Saint movie.
No,
because it wasn't enough like the character. Yeah,
you could do a Saint.
Oh, sure.
And that could be a franchise. I mean, that's the big thing all the time anymore. The studios are looking for the next franchise.
But you know what? I do it as a TV series.
Yeah,
I would because I think that I don't know that you would necessarily. Well, you basically need to do Ocean's 11 with one guy. This is essentially the way you should tell a Saint.
And you make it a CW show and put Robert Pattinson in. No, wait. Sorry. All right, time to go.
I don't know that I can talk to you anymore.
Okay, then we'll quit talking. we'll wrap up there. If you have an idea, if you have a comment or a question or a suggestion for a topic, now that we've passed 50, Katie, bar the door, right? You can leave us a comment or send us an email, h2o@scififorme.com. Our podcasts are available through iTunes and DoubleTwist and OneCast and Stitcher, the RSS feed over at our main site, which is scififorme.com. We have a number of podcasts besides this one.
Yes, we do.
And we do appreciate our audience here. This show, out of all of the ones that we do, this show has the biggest audience, and we thank you for that. We also encourage you to go visit our sponsor, superherostuff.com.
Yes.
But we also would like you to check out our other podcasts. There is the Level 1187 podcast, which focuses on the Marvel Cinematic Universe. There's the Rogues Gallery podcast, which does the same thing over on the DC side of things. And then we have our Sci-Fi for Chicks podcast, which is right now focusing on Gotham and Sleepy Hollow. We have the Echo Chamber podcast. We've got Week in Review, which is over at Sci-Fi for Me TV, which is our YouTube channel. That's a weekly digest of all of the headlines, all of the news from the week. So Star Wars news and video game news and comic book news and just general news, all wrapped up in one nice little package there. Also, we've got our recaps for 12 Monkeys. Mm-hmm. That's over there on Sci-Fi for Me TV. And then, of course, all of the news that is news, as much as we can fit to print, in our main site, which is scififorme.com, and we do encourage you to check that out. Find us all on social media, Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, Tumblr, Pinterest, YouTube, Google+. And that's going to do it for us for this 50th episode. We've gotten through 50.
We have.
Yeah.
Here's now, to the next 50.
Here's to the next 50. We're going to have to plan a pretty big celebration for our 100th episode. That's going to be, it'll be here before we know it.
I know. It does really go by fast. I mean,
it does.
We're doing it weekly, so we're looking at...
About this time next year.
About this time next year, yeah.
Yeah, just in time for Planet Comic Con 2016.
It'll be, hit the end of January next
year. Something like that. And just a programming note, we are planning on recording an episode out at Planet Comic Con 2015 here in Kansas City. So if you're in the area March 13th through the 15th, be sure to drop in and you can see us live when we do this. I did get the list of the panels that it looks like I'm going to be moderating.
Yeah.
I got to do some sit-ups. All right, that's going to do it for us, folks. Thanks very much for listening this week. Don't forget, go to superherostuff.com for your merchandise. And be back here next week for another episode of H2O on Sci-Fi for Me Radio.
This has been a presentation of scififorme.com. Copyright 2015 by Flaming Dog Media, LLC. All rights reserved. No portion of this program may be retransmitted without the express written consent of Flaming Dog Media. This is Sci-Fi for Me Radio.